Gay Mormon Stories is a production of Mormon Stories and the Open Stories Foundation. To support this podcast, please donate today at gaymormonstories.org. All donations go directly towards keeping the podcast alive and towards building a community of support for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer Mormons. And thanks for listening.
So when did things start to unravel in that marriage then?
So when we moved to California, suddenly like we weren't around other people. We weren't with our friends and family. And so it was just kind of us. And she didn't have a job. And I was away at school all day. And so kind of in this process, I noticed we were both pretty depressed. And my depression got pretty bad in the fall. It was the beginning of my PhD program in fall quarter. And I was just really depressed, and I didn't know what was wrong. And I was so I actually pulled out like my Evergreen manual again, and I'm like, okay, I just kind of need to go through this, and maybe if I do this, like, then this will help me to deal with what I'm going through and be okay with being married. And then we went to her parents for Christmas, and while we were there, I actually came across LDSresources.info. I came across Bill Bradshaw's research. I came across some things by Lee Beckstedt. And I'd had a dream about a guy, and this is something that was happening in my whole marriage, where like I would have sexual fantasies about guys, and I was like, what's wrong with me? Like, I'm married. I shouldn't be feeling this. Something must be wrong with me. And while I was like on Christmas break, that happened, and I'm like, okay, that was actually kind of nice. Like, what's the deal with this? And I came across Bill Bradshaw's research and some other resources on the internet, and the light just kind of hit me like, Alex, you're still gay. That never changed. You never diminished your same-sex attraction. That was always been there with you this whole time. And it was obvious to me at that point, but I realized I'd kind of been denying this for a long time.
Yeah.
No, like sexual orientation doesn't change. Mine never changed. I still felt as attracted to guys as I did when I was 17.
Yeah.
But like that's when the light kind of clicked on, and I kind of then had to renegotiate everything based on those terms. This is never going away. I think for a lot of my marriage, I thought, okay, like even if things aren't perfect now, thinking, especially reading the testimonials I had and Evergreen, that someday this is going to work out and someday it's going to get better and it's all going to be fine. But at that point, I realized this is as good as it gets. It doesn't change. Like, your sexual attractions and feelings don't change. They're not going to change. They never did change. And so now I have to figure out what I'm going to do in my relationship with the church and my relationship with my wife based on that fact and understanding that, instead of kind of the lies that I'd been fed before.
Okay, so this was sort of a corner for you where you really realized that you weren't really on a track for success.
Yeah. The other thing that I think kind of led into this is one of my colleagues at UC Riverside is gay, and he was in a relationship and he was happy. These sort of things, and being in California in a much more open environment than Utah, like especially out of Provo, Orem area, like I realized, oh, people are happy and gay here, and they're not all miserable, and they're not all promiscuous people, and all these things. Like, just sort of the lies and misinformation I'd been fed my whole life sort of came apart in the face of reality and research and experience and things like that.
Right. Okay, so is this about the point where you started blogging?
Yeah. As we're still at her parents' house, I write her this letter because I don't know how to, like, bring this up again. Obviously, she knows I struggle with same-gender attraction, but I finally say, I'm gay. What do you want to do about this? And she's like, well, do you want to divorce me? And I say, no, I don't want to divorce you. She's like, okay, well, let's see if we can work this out. So we go back to California. I start school again, and we just sort of table the issue for a while, I guess, and not talk about it. At this point, I'm trying to figure out what to do. I start blogging, and I start writing about what I'm going through and what I'm experiencing and what I'm feeling and what we talk about, and am I going to get divorced or what am I going to do? How am I going to deal with the church? And all of this is kind of going on.
Yeah, do you mind if we stop a little bit and talk just about the blogging, the phenomena of blogging among closeted gay Mormons during that decade? Because it seems like there was a sort of a boom of this sort of interaction tool that blogging was. Because blogging wasn't just you telling your stories. Blogging was telling your story and getting feedback, right?
Right.
And you were really sort of writing, opening up your life, but in an anonymous way, right?
Right. Yeah, no one knew who I was. And so this was some kind of a safe space for me to talk about things or express things and get feedback on things from other people.
Okay. And right. So you get networked with a bunch of gay Mormon closeted bloggers?
Yeah. So, what actually happened is I went on over Christmas break, as I'm like going through this kind of crisis in my head, I start again going on the internet and saying gay Mormon or Mormon married or like married gay or different searches, and I came across North Star, and I got involved in the forums on there, and I started posting on there a bit, and I was reading them pretty vociferously, just like trying to like take in all the information I could. Okay, you know, kind of like I did earlier, but from being more of an adult and from a different perspective and now being married and different things. And so,
okay, I'm a little bit not clear because I'm not totally 100% clear how North Star works, but were you doing the full North Star thing? Or were just doing, once again, a little bit peripheral like you did with Evergreen?
Yeah, so it was a little bit more peripheral. I came across their forums, and so I got involved with their online forum. And North Star's website at the time was just sort of coming together, as far as I know, or it maybe had been going for a while, but it was different than what it looks like now. And I imagine there's been quite a few changes since when I first got involved with it. But I was mostly just involved with the online forums and things like that. And so then I came across some blogs that were linked to on that site, and I started chatting with some people from North Star who were also closeted gay Mormons. And so that's kind of how I got involved in blogging. And so then I decided to make my own blog, and I would comment on other people's blogs and, you know, link to my blog. And so just kind of starting this discussion to figure out, okay, what do I do? Like, I guess I'm not the only one. And it was really nice not to feel alone, to feel like there were other people who understood what it was like to be married and Mormon and gay and closeted.
Right. And that was really quite a phenomenon, I think, at the time. And I'm not sure if it still is, if that's sort of a route people are taking now. But it seems like in this decade of the, whatever you call that decade, the first decade of this century. And so you went in there, and it sounds like it was impacting you a lot, the interactions you were having there, the narratives you were describing to each other.
Yeah, definitely. And it was interesting because I got narratives from different sides, like people who chose to stay in the church, people who chose not to stay in the church, people who stayed married, who got divorced. These were all sort of different narratives, and I was looking at their lives and my life and trying to figure out, okay, like, what's the likelihood of this being successful or not?
Uh-huh.
What are the different options or routes that I can take?
And you were doing all of this sort of in isolation from any living, breathing, flesh and blood gay people. I mean, you just weren't connecting at all to gay community still.
Not quite. I also, like I said, I had a friend in my department who is gay, and he's open, and he's in a relationship, and I somewhere in this process come out to him. And that was really helpful to me. And he's like, I'm not going to tell anyone. I'm very respectful. I don't out anyone.
Yeah.
And so we kind of start up conversations and just kind of talking about different things and me telling him kind of some of my experiences. So I did kind of get some exposure, not to like a whole community, but to someone else that's gay and have another lens to look through my experiences and things.
Okay. Well, then keep going. What happened next?
Yeah. At the same time, I started going to therapy at the counseling center, and I went in and I kind of told the therapist my experience. She's like, wow, like that's quite the story. You've gone 10 years, and so let's talk about that. So I just kind of went in every week, and I sort of unloaded on my therapist like different conflicts and things I was feeling. As time progressed, I got more involved in blogging, and my wife and I kept talking, and it became more and more clear that this wasn't going to work. And as part of that, I started telling my family that I was gay. And
how did that go over?
Having to deal with that reaction. Well, you know, my brother, one brother was really supportive, and that was really helpful. My dad was like, yeah, I figured like you were probably still gay, you know, like,
okay.
And then my mom, like I told her, but she didn't really sink in until like I talked with her like a month later, and she's like, oh, you were trying to tell me that you're still gay? I thought you were talking about like your experience like years ago. And so like it didn't really sink into her mind what was happening. And then eventually like I told my wife that I wanted to get divorced, and we went and visited my family, and she told my mom that we were going to get divorced. And so that led to a lot of discussions and a lot of things like, well, how could you do this? You're married in the temple. Like, so that was really difficult to not only deal with coming out and with my marriage, but also the guilt of being married in the temple and my family telling me to stay married to her.
Yeah. But through all of this, you managed to keep an element of friendship, an element of rapport with your wife. Can you describe what it was like between you and her through all this, even though it felt totally wrong for you to be married, but there was also...
Yeah, so there was this feeling between us, like, this is my best friend. We've spent so much time, and there's actually this kind of nice feeling at a time, like, we're finally being open about things and, like, talking about things we've been too afraid to talk about for our whole marriage.
Yeah.
About, like, what it means that I'm gay. And so for a time, like, it was really pretty good. But, you know, there's also a lot of conflict because we're getting divorced, and that happened pretty well. Unfortunately, though, like, after we separated and she moved back with her parents out of state and I was on my own, as my family was pressuring to me, like, I kind of went back on wanting to get divorced, and that confused her, and that sort of led to a lot more conflict between us, and that was very unfortunate.
This was after she'd already left.
I kind of freaked out, like, not having her around, and I was scared, and I was lonely, you know, and all these things. And I was like, well, maybe I've made a mistake. And so that led to us not really talking as much to each other.
But was this a scenario more like you called her, you said, I want to get back together? This sort of impacted her in such a way where she kind of felt like she needed to distance herself more so that she could sort of move on? Is that what you're trying to describe? Or?
Yeah, that's kind of what happened. So she just told me, like, I can't take you, like, figuring out whether or not you love me or not. I can't take you, like, going back and forth like this.
Okay.
And I understood that. And so she finally just, on of her, you know, and it was a mutual decision to get divorced in the first place. She said, Alex, you know, I don't care if you change your mind or, like, you figure out that you're bisexual or something. I don't want to be married to you.
Okay. So at a certain point, she arrived at that, and it took her a while to get there. Just tell me, I know it's, you know, it's her experience, but do you mind sharing? Do you feel like for her, it was sort of a shattering of her vision of life?
Yeah. I mean, it's difficult for me to speak to exactly what her experience is, but I would say that mostly, she realized that there was something wrong. She sort of, like me, had ignored it. And for me, it was definitely a shattering. I think for her, she noticed there were problems all along the marriage, but I think she just kind of felt dumb. She blamed herself for not breaking up with me when I told her I was gay, or not breaking up with me. So, like, there was this sense of regret for making those decisions. She should have known better or something like that. Yeah. I mean, and I can't speak for her exactly how she felt.
I'm just trying to imagine that for someone in her position, that there's two losses. There's a loss of the actual romance with you. If she did love you, which it sounds like she did, she had to at some point deal with the grief that you weren't quite as in love with her in the way that she was hoping. That's one. But there's also this sort of crush that would happen to any Mormon girl of facing this reality that, you know, you're going to be a divorced person, you're going to have the stigma, that your life didn't follow this trajectory that you were planning on, that this part of growing up for everybody, but in a way it comes on strong with her. So it just makes me wonder, you know, if that was a big element of hers or most women who are going through this scenario.
I think she was definitely very concerned about that. And I think she was concerned that I'm divorced now. You know, even though she was fairly young, 24, 25, there was a sense like, oh, you know, like in Mormon culture, I've missed my chance to get married. No one's going to want to marry me because I'm a divorcee. I've really screwed up. As she talked to me, like, because we were pretty open with each other, even as we were getting divorced, just me trying to, like, comfort her and say, like, no, you're really great, but that doesn't really mean that much because I'm gay and I'm telling her, like, I'm not attracted to you. And so there wasn't much I could do. And, I mean, I guess that's sort of what I realized somewhere. I can't help her with this, even though, like, this is someone I care about so much. Like, I'm not going to comfort her in this matter. This is something she's going to have to deal with herself. That's the difficult part about getting divorced. Like, even if you're really close to someone, The thing is, like, we got along really well with each other, but we were never really a marriage. Like, that's the way that it worked between her and me. Like, yeah, we did have a sexual relationship, but it wasn't a good one. And we just kind of were okay with being friends with each other and doing that. But when finally we kind of had to come to terms with what it meant being married when one person is gay and the other person isn't, we realized we would never have the kind of marriage that we in our minds wanted to have. So yeah, that's what happened there. And when we realized that, we realized we had no future together and that we needed to get divorced. And that was hard.
Yeah. Well, and it was a struggle. And at some point, she had to take control of it and say, I have to move on for my sake. I personally had I never got married, but I had a pretty strong relationship with a woman that I drug out for a very long time because of my ambivalence about it. Because I loved her so much and I thought she was so great, but I just couldn't get married. So it was all this push and pull. And of course, it sounds sort of familiar, this sort of idea that someone you get along with really well and you just like being with, but it's just not working. And
yeah, well, and I mean, at some point, like as I was more open, she realized, yeah, he's really gay. And there was sort of like this testing period where it was really kind of strange where she's like, well, do you think this guy is good looking? Do you think this guy is good looking? Okay. And I'd say, yeah. And so, I mean, like we were kind of really open about that, yeah. But I'm sure that was hard for her too. And I probably didn't realize at the time, like how difficult that was for her and how painful, like all of that was for her. But I mean, I think in the problem I had and why I went back and forth is like, as I like wanted to stay in the church and I wanted to be okay with my family, plus missing her and like what happens, like we were together 5 years. And so like that was a terrible loss for me too. And I knew it was going to be hard, but I didn't know it would be that hard to say goodbye to her and not be with her every day and all these things that I'd gotten used to. I wanted her back, or I wanted things to go back to how they were, even if it was like we were naive. Where I was okay with the church, because it's hard to be in the church if you're not married. That's what you're taught. Options were kind of presented to me, like celibacy or being married to a woman or getting married to another woman. And that's actually what my bishop at the time laid out for me. I was like, well, like I would prefer to be married, but obviously she's not going to go for that. So I'm going to have to figure out something else.
So your bishop was even at that point talking to you about a future of trying it again with someone else.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you started a different line of thought. But let's go then. What changed about that? I mean, yeah, you must have been really lonely, and I understand that because you got divorced before you really had replaced your life with something else. And, you know, how did you manage that transition then?
Mostly by friendship, I think, like, as I was getting more open, I ended up coming out to my graduate program. And I'm sure some people were like, whoa, like the Mormon married guy is actually gay. We didn't see that coming.
Okay.
Because like I was pretty good at hiding it. And they're like, you know, I have pretty good gaydar, but somehow you slipped by. Probably because we didn't really know you. Because I just kind of show up and I'd go home and I didn't really get to know anyone until like I was sort of forced to, you know, and like, what am I going to do? And so I started building friendships with people, and they're really good friends, and they helped me like through this whole process of getting divorced and coming out. And then I kind of just took slow baby steps. I actually, as we decided to get divorced, I decided to go on like a gay dating site and things like that. And I set up a date while we were separated, but when she found out, she was upset about that, and that was difficult. So that kind of actually scared me also away from like being willing to pursue that as well. And I was going back and forth with the church.
Was it all interconnected? Your relationship with the church was really impeding you from exploring your gay life now, or how did that play a role?
I had to move, and so I moved to a new ward and things, so it's like, well, maybe I should get involved here, and I want to stay in the church. And then all this is kind of going on at the same time, and it was all pretty interconnected. And I'm going to therapy, and I'm trying to figure out different options. The therapist really just listened to me. Like, she didn't really try to steer me one way or the other, and that was actually really nice.
But your relationship to the church, was this the only issue that was really impeding you? Were there any other religious issues that ever presented themselves aside from this?
It sort of opened the door, I guess, because suddenly I had to confront what prophets and apostles had said about homosexuality with my own experience, and I came to conclude that they were wrong. And so it was like, well, if they're wrong about this, what else are they wrong about? Or how do I reframe that understanding of prophets and apostles speaking for God. And
what specifically was wrong? Give me some examples of something a prophet said that you know is wrong because your experience has proven to you that it's wrong.
For example, Boyd K. Packer has his talk that he gave to The One where he claims that masturbation can sometimes lead you to be gay. And I just knew that that was wrong based on lots of experience and things. Or, you know, what Spencer W. Kimball said about it being able to be fixed. Obviously, like, it wasn't able to be fixed. And so, like, I knew that that was wrong. And I started reading more research from the APA that, you know, sexual orientation doesn't change. And I understood what sexual orientation was, that it's not just an attraction. Because I think for a long time I just viewed it as like, oh, I have this sinful attraction to guys. And suddenly, like, I didn't see it that way. I saw it as sexual orientation is about your romantic and emotional orientation towards someone of the same gender as well, and not just the sexual feelings, and that's all kind of tied in one, and you can fall in love with someone of the same gender and things like that. So understanding that put me at odds with a lot of the things that Elder Oaks had said about same gender attraction and it being a struggle, and that he said, like, we don't know why it's caused in different things, but definitely it was a sin. And little by little I saw being gay as not a sin, but as something of part of who I am and something natural and something that God is okay with, and that there's nothing wrong with me being gay. And that's something I think I had felt at times before, but I wasn't really sure if I could trust my personal revelation versus what the church seemed to be saying about the issue. And
well, let's talk about that a second. Did you have a moment where you really felt that you had a confirmation that God was okay with you being gay?
Remember when I was 17, I had started questioning, and I remember like being really depressed about everything one time, and even being kind of suicidal, and so I prayed, because that's what I had been taught to do, you know, when you're in these experiences. And I remember feeling in that prayer that it was okay that I was gay, and I didn't know what that meant at the time, but that's kind of what I got from that prayer. And unfortunately, I think a lot of things I heard from the church and society told me it wasn't okay to be gay. I kind of got away from that experience that I'd have as a 17-year-old until I was older and once again sort of like opened myself up to it. Because I kind of tried to push everything from when I was 17 as I was being rebellious to the church.
So this led you to devalue that experience that you had.
Exactly.
That was actually an affirming experience that you really felt was a spiritual confirmation that you were okay, but
yeah,
you couldn't fully buy into it, even though.
Well,
you
and
had
I didn't
this
know like how to experience. Okay, what does it mean that I'm okay that I'm gay? Does it mean it's okay to do something, like to act on my feelings, as it was always framed in Evergreen or other discussions, or does it just mean it's okay to be who I am? Or I didn't really know how to interpret that feeling of it's okay to be gay, but I think at the time I definitely felt like, okay, God is okay with you. You don't need to change. Unfortunately, like going through Evergreen and everything, I think is what made me devalue that experience and get away from it.
Uh-huh. Did you have some more then? Were you comforted with more of these experiences throughout this difficult process?
I think as all of this was going on, kind of those 10 years where I was sort of in denial about it, I did have various moments where I prayed or I just sought comfort with everything. It wasn't the same kind of openness and affirming that I'd say, it's okay that you're gay, but it was, I don't know, I did feel some sense of comfort. It's okay being who I am. I guess I framed it in terms of, it's okay that I'm struggling with same gender attraction. And that eventually led me, I think, as like I was more open and I opened my mind a little bit more, that this isn't actually a temptation that you're gay. This is part of who you are. This is part of how you feel and look at the world, and there's nothing wrong with it. You're different, but there's nothing wrong with being different.
Yeah.
So I've heard a lot of analogies, but I really like the one that said it's like having blue eyes versus brown eyes or being left-handed. This is just a different trait that you have. For whatever reason, you were different than other people, but that's okay. And that helped me a lot.
Yeah. Okay, so what happened? Did you start dating guys? Did you decide it was okay to do that? Did you go out to a gay bar? How did you dip your toes in the water there?
I was separated and the divorce wasn't final, because in California, unfortunately, it takes 6 months for your divorce to be final after you file. So it's kind of this long sort of lingering. Even though I was sure it was going to happen, there was still some doubt. And I was going back and forth about what I was going to do with the church. Sometimes I would go, sometimes I wouldn't. And I don't know, it got to a point where I stopped going altogether, and I just felt like I really needed to let myself explore the idea of going out with guys and being with guys. Also, like, along with that, I'd started to have more questions about the church. And, you know, as I kind of opened this box of what does this mean that, like, some of the things the prophets and apostles say aren't from God, it got me, as they say, going down the rabbit hole of church history and church contradictions and doctrine and things like that. So that was all kind of hard. But the main issue was the way that the church was treating LGBT people. That by far outweighed any other question or historical concern or doctrinal concern.
Where were you during Prop 8?
During Prop 8, I was in Utah, and so...
Okay, so you sort of missed being directly...
Kind of, but everyone in Utah was really talking about it a lot, so I'd hear a lot of comments, bigoted comments at church, and that kind of hurt me, because even if I wasn't identifying myself as gay, like, those kind of things still stung. And so, again, like, I sort of put that on the shelf and put that away for a while.
But the shelf is getting heavy there.
Yeah, but the shelf is getting heavier and heavier, and so... I take a kind of break from the church, and I decide I'm going to go ahead and date guys, or at least put myself out there. So I go on some dating websites, and then after like a couple months go by, I do let myself go out with guys a little bit more. And so it gets scary at first, and especially with the kind of ideas I've been raised with about homosexuality. But I don't know, like, I didn't have a relationship with anyone, but I did have experiences, I guess you'd say, with a couple guys, and that was different, and letting myself open up to that.
Were you going to bars, or was it just simply an online date here and there, or did you really start to explore what the gay community was?
I kind of dipped my toe in it, and, like, little by little, like, let myself experience different aspects, like... I went on a date with a guy, and then I chatted with guys online, but I never really like went out again. Or I went to a gay bar with friends once, and then I went to another gay bar once, you know, and just kind of danced with some guys and felt what that was like. And then, like, I went out with another guy, and that didn't work out. And
you weren't finding a friend, a social circle?
I became really good friends with another gay guy that we met online, but it didn't turn out to be any sort of like relationship or sexual at all, but we were just really good kind of platonic friends. And so that was actually really good for me. And we'd talk a lot just about his experiences and my experiences. And that was cool. So then, you know, as time went on, I did have a sexual experience with a guy, and that was different than other experiences that I'd had. And that was kind of confirmation to me that I was gay. It wasn't like I didn't have a full sexual experience, I'd say, but, like, you know, I'd let myself kiss another guy, for example. And so I just little by little, I kind of took it slowly, letting myself be okay with the idea of dating a guy or, you know.
Was this first kiss? This was your first kiss?
Yeah.
Remarkable? Was it eye-opening?
Yeah, it definitely was eye-opening. It turned out that the guy was kind of a jerk, so in hindsight, but it still doesn't ruin, like, at the time. It felt very nice to, like, let myself kiss another guy and feel that and feel attracted to the person that I'm kissing and feel a connection there, like, even if it was just that one kiss one time with that guy. But
did things start to move along in such a way that it started to feel natural to date guys at some point? Did you develop a desire to actually have a boyfriend?
Yeah, I would say that's what I was doing on the online dating sites and things. What I was looking for was a boyfriend, you know, and I didn't know when that would happen or how that was happen or how he would date growing up being Mormon and not knowing how dating outside of being Mormon worked or dating in the gay world worked. I had no idea, like, how how to go about that really, but I decided like I was going to at least let myself go out there a little bit and try and meet guys. So I should actually jump back and say I went home, you know, for Christmas for a couple weeks, and I went to church for the first time in a while with that. And then I ended up going back when I came back home to Riverside. I ended up going to the singles ward and trying that out for a bit. I had gone to that singles ward a couple months earlier, and the talk, which is actually probably what drove me outside of going to church, was about Prop 8 and how Prop 8 was Christian service. And in the context of me being okay with being gay and reevaluating all of those things, that really, really bothered me that here we are like in 2010, this is years later, but we're still talking about Prop 8. So that kind of drove me away from going to church.
Okay. So that was really your final separation finally from active participation.
Yeah, it was that, and I think the priesthood lesson on the law of chastity, where there was a quote from President Hinckley that talked about so-called gays and lesbians, and they didn't even talk about it during the lesson, but I just kind of read it on my own as that was happening. And it was kind of those were kind of the things that said, you know what, I can't do this anymore. I can't be in this environment where they're going to be unwelcoming to me or talk about how gay people are so sinful. And this isn't what I need right now.
Yeah. Even though you weren't actually doing sinful stuff.
I wasn't even doing anything sinful. Yeah.
But you were so-called. You were a so-called gay.
And I guess
called yourself gay. And
I wanted to date someone, and I didn't see anything wrong with that. Like, I couldn't reconcile in my mind the law of chastity, how somehow it was like okay for, you know, heterosexual people to kiss and things before marriage and then get married and you know, have sex. But for me, because I was gay, holding hands or kissing is like the ultimate sin. Like, that didn't make sense to me anymore. Like, so yeah. That lesson on the law of chastity particularly bothered me. So
I'm imagining that you're getting more and more separated from the church also kind of allowed you, freed you up a little bit to feel better about your dating and maybe helped you engage more in that process.
Definitely. I mean, and I don't think I went to a gay bar or anything while I was still going to church. It was only after I kind of decided not to go to church anymore that, like, and kind of distanced myself a bit from that. So I opened myself up to dating guys and going out with guys, meeting guys in bars, although like I didn't know what to expect from that scene, and I was very shy.
Yeah.
So that was kind of difficult for me.
Yeah. Well, so keep going. How did things move forward for you?
Yeah. I went on a different dating website, and I just started chatting with a bunch of guys, and I went out to coffee with a guy, and then I went out with another guy, and that worked really well. Like, and we started dating, and like, I knew it was soon, but I wanted him to be my boyfriend, and he wanted to be with me, and now we're dating, and we've been dating for almost a year now, and that's worked out really well for us. So I did meet someone.
So you did meet someone.
Yeah.
Listening to us, your story isn't terribly different from what it would have been if you were a Mormon meeting a woman. You know, you were out there, you were dating, you met someone. So he's your first love, and that's who you're with now, and you're hoping to make it work.
Yeah.
Okay. So you've been going out for a year now with your partner.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're actually moving in together. So that's
what
we're in the middle of right now. But it's really nice. It's interesting to just kind of like set up a home and like do all of those things like as a couple. And it's really nice. I'm really happy. Like, I love him and he loves me, and we're really happy together. So.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like always perfect. Every couple has conflicts and things like that, but we talk about it. And I think it actually was really hard at first because he didn't know what to do with the fact that I was Mormon and like, or had been Mormon, and he wasn't sure what that was going to mean and like how.
Did he have a similar experience with his background religion or with his family?
He's from Mexico, and so he grew up like around a lot of Catholics, but his family was never as intensely Catholic as maybe my family was. So he wasn't like, he didn't like go to church every Sunday or anything like that. Okay. So
why don't you tell me a little bit about how you managed the courtship, the getting in a relationship in the context of the normal paradigm that you have, you know, where you involve your family, you had a certain plan with your wife, you get engaged, you get married in the temple, you introduce to your parents. How was this different this time?
Yeah.
Particularly with your family.
You know, there are people in my family who are supportive of me and understand being gay and were very supportive of me as I was getting divorced. And there are other people in my family who didn't understand it at all. And so with those people, I didn't really tell them anything. I told my brother, who's really supportive, and some other people in my family. And they were really excited that I was dating someone. And it was only when, you know, I guess I was afraid to tell other people in my family, like, until I was sure that it was, like, something a little bit more serious. And so, like, after, like, a couple months, I would say I actually avoided talking to my parents during this time because I just didn't want to deal with it. And I didn't want to deal with the conflict. I didn't want them to kind of rain on my parade, I guess you'd say.
Yeah.
And so, like, after, like, a couple months, I was like, okay, I'm dating someone. They should at least know that. So I let them know. And they didn't know what to say exactly, but they didn't react too negatively to that. So that was good. They just, I think my mom told me, like, she didn't know how to take my news. But it's definitely, coming back to your question, I would say it's not the same kind of integration into the family and friend and church relationship as, you know, if we were a heterosexual couple or like a...
Or what I had in my marriage.
Yeah, it's more individual because it's hard. It's been harder to integrate him into that. And wondering if I should integrate him into that.
Because you're worried that he's not going to have a good experience with your family because you're not sure that they're going to accept
Well, and
him.
That was what I felt for a long time. And I think he was hesitant, too, to like meet my family because, okay, well, they're Mormon and they obviously look at this as like a sin or something. So like I wanted him to meet my family and I wanted him to kind of get integrated into that, but he was very hesitant and with reason, like I think so. But he did actually just about 2 weeks ago after Christmas, we went down for a day and met my family and went to my brother's birthday party and that actually went pretty well. So
that was his first introduction to your parents.
Yeah, it was his first introduction to my parents and to my brothers and sisters and things, and it went pretty well. So,
well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, so it sounds like you're getting started down a road, but it sounds like you're in a good place with it.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and it also, you know, one thing I just want to comment about your experience is that it doesn't sound like your gay life is terribly different than your straight life was. It's just that you're with a man instead of a woman.
Yeah, that's pretty much true. You know,
I mean, if we're trying to create this stereotype of the wild gay hedonist of lifestyle, it doesn't sound like you've been there to me.
No, I mean, sometimes we'll go to a gay bar, but that's about as wild as it gets. We'll go out or we'll go shopping or something, but that's about as gay as it gets.
Okay, so
yeah,
I mean,
like, we do the typical things. I mean, like we make dinner for each other, or like we go out to eat, or we go to a movie, or you know, we have to worry about moving, is what we're in the middle of now. So it's, I don't know, it's, I go to school, we both work. Like, it's, I think it's pretty similar in a lot of ways.
Well, it's beautifully boring. I mean, not to say that's boring, but it's extraordinarily ordinary, and not in a critical way, but in a way of just pointing out to my audience that your life, you're being allowed to just have a normal life. And if you're allowed to be normal, that's what you are, normal, you know? That's,
yeah, I mean, I think it's what you want it to be. Like, being gay is what you want it to be. There are people that are a little bit crazier and want that kind of lifestyle that exists. And, you know, that's their choice. But that's not the lifestyle that I want. And that's not the lifestyle that my boyfriend wants. And so you, I guess you find a like-minded person and you live that way, and it's pretty, I don't know, pretty simple.
Okay.
I mean, maybe it's not simple to find that person, but luckily I have, and I'm really, really grateful for that. So.
Well, it takes a number of ingredients, you know. You had to be ready for it in where you were in life. You had to be open enough in your own self-esteem so that you wouldn't sabotage relationships. You also had to be open enough to what you were seeking to be realistic, right? You know, you didn't just set a fantasy person out there that could never be found, right? You found a real-life person, and you were able to fall in love with a real-life person. So you had the right recipe, whether you were thinking that or not. Let's go on to something else, though. I do want to ask you just a couple of questions that relate to your Mormonism again. What do you see happening with your spiritual path?
As I got into a relationship, it became clearer and clearer to me that I couldn't kind of sit on the fence. Like, maybe I'll go to church, maybe I won't go to church. And maybe some people can do it where they're in a relationship and go to church, but I couldn't deal with the contradictions that were inherent in, you know, feeling really good about this experience and then going to church and then hearing how terrible it is for people to live that way. And that just, I couldn't handle that kind of dissonance in my own life. And so for a while, though, not going to church, I think, made me feel like I was cut off from being spiritual things. And it's only as, like, I've kind of reconciled that. I don't know, it's gone through phases where at first, like, I would say, like, I really missed the church even if I didn't go. And then it was sort of like, the church is terrible because of this, 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 and this. And then it's kind of gone to, like, a more even keel where I realized that there are experiences that I had being Mormon that were spiritual that don't change if I don't go to church or if I'm not Mormon anymore. And, like, to pursue those spiritual paths, like, there's lots of ways to get there, to that feeling, what, like, in Mormonism we call the spirit. There's lots of ways to feel that and to feel that kind of spiritual fulfillment out of life. And I think prayer is one way to do that. Reading things for me, like, they're not necessarily scripture, but they're uplifting things, you could say, things that I think are enlightened or things that, like, lead me to a greater understanding of the world and the universe and who I am and my relation to the universe and things like that. That,
yeah.
So that's kind of taken the place of scripture study. I mean, I don't know. There's lots of ways. I think the church offers a lot of those things, and you have to sort of, like, it's all together of a mixture of good and bad. And when you stop going to church, you have to find other ways to fulfill yourself that aren't sort of like this easy prepackaged, here we are, we're going to sing and we're going to, you know, read spiritual thoughts now and here's our service. And you kind of have to, like, find those things from a lot of different sources. Or, like, the fellowship, you go out with other friends and things like that. So that's, you know, your social environment isn't set up for you, I guess, anymore. Yeah. So,
have you and your partner started forming community around you? Have you sort of replaced that element of your Mormon heritage?
Yeah. I mean, and that's, I think, the hardest part is rebuilding that community, because for a while I just felt like an exile from my community, and that was very painful. But, like, you know, having common friends or doing things with other friends, or, like, I would say we're still kind of in this process. And I bet every couple, straight or gay or whatever, goes through this process of, like, their own life and what they have, and then their couple life together and their couple friends, and it's okay if they have their own friends too. And so, I mean, I think we're going through a similar process as other couples go through with that. So it's a little bit harder because my world was kind of turned upside down with everything. And so I'm in the process of rebuilding my own community just on my own too. But, like,
yeah,
it seems to sort of work out in a way. And it made me feel really good that he would meet my family, and that, you know, it helps that, like, he's from Mexico, so he speaks Spanish mostly. So that's a different challenge in that aspect in and of itself. But luckily, because of the program I'm in, like, a lot of my friends already speak Spanish. And actually, that's an advantage. When he met my family, is one of my cousins had been to Mexico on a mission. And so that let him sort of talk more in that environment and feel a little bit more comfortable.
Well, my husband is Latino too. So yeah, we've definitely gone through the language playing a role in trying to integrate him into my family. And so for me, it was hard to really weed out what was the barrier to him really relating to my family members, whether it was the language, whether it was the fact that we were gay. And to this day, I can't really tell you what slowed it down. We got on a good path in the end, but it did take a long time.
Yeah.
So I have a question for you. You know Tom and Wendy Montgomery, right?
Yeah, I do. They're from my home ward.
Okay, well, they are definitely allies, strong allies for the cause.
Yeah, they've been really helpful in talking with my mom about, because my mom, I think, for a long time didn't know how to react to having a gay son, and letting her know it was, like, okay to be Mormon and like, accept your gay son has been really helpful, so.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's important because by having people who are, like Wendy and Tom, who are really verbal, visible in their ward about supporting their gay son, they are making themselves available to other people like your mother who really needed that outreach there. And I listened to them describe your mother and they describe her as a wonderful person. But I can imagine she was lost about this issue. And I think what a big help they potentially were to her if they helped her advance things between you and her just by your mom being aware that she's not absolutely alone on this. There's other people who do this and there's ways that they're learning to manage it. And so I think that's amazing and really nice that, you know, we both know these great activists that they've become in this past year.
Yeah, well, I think the problem is isolation. I mean, it's just like when you're gay, trying to deal with it in isolation is so difficult and depressing. So I think that happens for family too. When they feel like there's no one I can talk to this about, you know, it shows the way they react, the way they feel. Like it's just a lot to deal with. So yeah. Having other people who you can communicate with and talk about it and not feeling alone makes a big difference for everyone.
At some point, I talked to you about the Family Acceptance Project pamphlet too, and you mentioned that that also played a role. Would you mind repeating that for us?
Yeah, so after the Family Acceptance Project came out, I wanted my parents to read it. I read over it, and it made a big difference actually for me, for one, to kind of see things from my parents' perspective a little thing. One of the things it talks about in there is how sometimes the desire to protect your child can lead to think to misunderstandings and make your child feel unwelcome. And that kind of clicked for me that that was sort of maybe what my parents were going through at that time when I came out to them. And thanks to Tom and Wendy, they helped my mom to read that pamphlet. And after she read that, it took her a while, but after about a month or so, we had a conversation. It was really a beautiful conversation, I think a difficult conversation about, you know, what it means to love your son and accept your son. And she always loved me, but it was harder for her to show that to me. And when she wasn't sure, she didn't want to give me the wrong messages and things. So I don't know. It just cleared up a lot of things between us and has gone a long way to to bridging some of those gaps between us that happened because I've come out. And so much so that she even invited me and my boyfriend to come home, and that happened. We met the family, so it's been really great. I'm really glad that resource is there, and it's helped my family a lot.
Yeah. Well, I'm just going to make a plug for the Family Acceptance Project pamphlet that he's talking about. It's most of the listeners already know about this, but it's a pamphlet that was produced by Caitlin Ryan at San Francisco, I don't want to say this wrong, State University, I believe, and with a big help and input from Bob Reese, who a lot of us also are familiar with, being representing the Mormon community and the Mormon viewpoint. And it is a pamphlet that combined the data that she had gathered in her research there about gay and lesbians and what family factors make them at higher risk for suicide, but also for other dangerous behaviors instead of drug addiction and unsafe sexual practices and other dangerous behaviors. So the research is critically important, but also the presentation of it is really important because families until now have really been at a loss for how to best help their gay and lesbian and bisexual and transsexual children. And so this pamphlet gives an excellent resource on what has been proven to be both harmful and helpful to these individuals. It's a little bit interesting that, you know, even at your stage of life where you're actually much beyond being a teenager, Alex, that in spite of that, your mother just being presented with that information, it helped her actually have empathy towards understanding you. And so I'm really pleased to hear that the pamphlet is helping more than just the teens who are struggling, but it's helping a lot of gay and lesbian people who are trying to negotiate the relationships with their family with this new information sometimes that they're trying to deal with. So that's very interesting.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I mean, I think because of everything that happened with me coming out at 17 and then kind of going back from that and then coming out again, like there's things that we never dealt with from that situation from when that happened. And I don't know, it just really helped me to put things in perspective, and it helped her to understand how I think she told me, I understand how you must feel about us and all the things that like have happened between us, and I'm so sorry. And it's just, I don't know, it's really beautiful the kind of things that happen when people can communicate with each other and understand each other a lot better. And I love that it's geared specifically toward LDS people. Of course, there's other things in there that apply across the board, but this particular pamphlet is geared for LDS families, and it's really great.
Yeah, I really hope that I'm going to repeat over and over again that pamphlet needs to get a lot more attention. And I really hope that it gets really adopted by the bishops throughout the church, and that they really help all the families that need it, and not just the families, but all the community. So yeah, thanks for highlighting that.
Yeah.
There was just, you know, I also want to point out that we have something in common. We're both involved in a long-term relationship, in my case, a marriage, with someone from a different country who happens to be Spanish-speaking, Latino. I just wanted to point out that I'm actually in a relationship of 12 years with someone, and it's from a different culture and a different religion. In our case, we happen to share a commonality that we both came from very intensely religious families, and his Catholic experience, although it was very different than Mormon, you know, the Catholic experience, but it had a lot of things in common in the family dynamics. And I'm just curious, how that's been for you, or how has the culture interaction been, the cultural interaction, the dealing with the issues of being a couple from two cultures and even two countries?
Yeah, being a binational couple is interesting. He's from Mexico, and he's only been here a few years, and it's great. I mean, we talk in Spanish a lot, and that helps me, obviously.
Yeah, that's your career. We haven't talked about that, but I think that, or maybe we didn't mention it, but that is your career emphasis is Spanish and Spanish literature, right? Or is it more Spanish language?
Yeah. No, it's more Spanish literature.
Okay.
But yeah, just kind of, you know, speaking every day in a different language is one aspect to that. But you know, there's different cultural things, and he doesn't come from the same religious background. His family is Catholic, but not as intensely Catholic as my family is Mormon, so that's a little bit different. So it's interesting for him to kind of understand all of that and what that means. But yeah, I think it's great. It has its challenges, but it also has its rewards to be from different cultures and things. So
yeah. Well, this is certainly, you know, it's a big impact in my life because this particular issue really points to the importance of marriage equality and some of the ways that the lives of gay and lesbians are really impacted by the lack of marriage equality. In our case, it really is a huge issue. My partner, Diego, we've been together for 12 years. We're completely interdependent, both financially, besides just emotionally, but our lives are interdependent in every way. And yet I cannot sponsor him to immigrate to the United States of America, in spite of the fact that we've been married now for approximately 8 years. We were married in Canada. And because of this, I had to move away from the United States. I really, in order to live with my partner, my husband, I'm forced to live outside of the country. And, you know, I'm lucky because I have a particular career where I'm able to do that, and I'm able to manage that with some amount of hardship. And in the end, I'm appreciating the experiences I'm getting living where I am living. But on the other hand, it wasn't by choice. It was by necessity.
Yeah, well, it's difficult, and it's a difficulty that doesn't necessarily have to be there. And I know, like, you're making the best of it and it's actually turning out really great, but at the same time, like, you should be able to to sponsor him. And I mean, we're not married, you know, it's not legal in California, but we are in a committed relationship to each other, and he's my partner, you know, we live together. It's and someday, you know, I think we could get married. And I wish that, you know, even though he has permission to be here and everything, he's not a citizen. And so that presents its own difficulties. Like, for example, for at least the time being, we can't travel internationally. I mean, I'm a grad student. I don't have a lot of resources, but there's just lots of things that come up that.
Well, he's being deprived some rights, and by extension, so are you, because you can't get married. Because if you could get married, he would buy, even though he's on a track for citizenship now, he would be on a much faster track. And so right there, there's a clear difference in his status. Your relationship in the eyes of the state is not valid, at least in the federal government. So,
well, yeah, and it's frustrating because even if it becomes legal in California because of DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act, as it currently stands, you can't sponsor someone for immigration benefits. So until that gets resolved somehow, then it's just a long fight ahead for marriage equality.
Well, hopefully not so long. We've got some hope with the Supreme Court kind of giving us a push forward on that. We're just crossing our fingers, aren't we? Because we really don't know how that's going to turn out.
Yeah, I definitely follow all of that very closely.
Well, I mean, and there's just a huge list of rights. I mean, right now we're happy enough where we are that even if I could sponsor him, maybe we wouldn't choose to move right now to the United States. But things change, right? And we might want to, and I want to have that right. I'm an American citizen, you know, and my family's there and my culture's there, and I'm even working in the United States. I have to travel there frequently. And if life changes in such a way that I need to live in the United States, I need to be able to live with my partner. But
it's about having the freedom to do things. Yeah. Like, for example, I can't go with him to Culiacan, Mexico, because he has to wait because of immigration rules to get permission to travel and all these things, because he's waiting in line for citizenship. And so it's just, you know, that would be something I think really great for our relationship to do that. And we'll be fine, you know, in spite of that. But it's just an opportunity. It's a freedom that we don't have right now.
To visit his home of origin, in other words, his birthplace, and probably some relatives, right?
Exactly. Like, his friend is getting married and we can't go, and it's hard for him, I'm sure, but it's just the way it is, so.
Yeah. And that's beside all these other things, such as hospital visitation, such as my right for him to receive my Social Security benefits.
Buying all of this stuff together, and God forbid something happened to one of us, like, that's just, it's not, he'd probably be fine, but I don't know, and I worry about that. Like, I'd want him to be taken care of if anything happened, illness, whatever, you know? So there's a lot of things that I think people don't think about that happen when you get married.
I mean, you're paying the same amount of Social Security as anybody, but why don't you get the same benefits? I mean, there is a difference, and that one is going to impact us. And I don't know if your insurance is an issue. Mine sure is. I have to buy separate insurance, you know, for him. So, I just didn't want to blow over that, because in a way we share that. I mean, I'm happy that you at least can live in the same country. At least you have that now. But there's very some clear benefits that you're not allowed because of the second class status at a federal level. And even if you get the right in California, there'll still be plenty of rights you'll be missing for that reason. So we can just only hope that the federal policy can change, and that the Supreme Court will also really recognize, you know, our lack of equality.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate the discussion of that issue too.
Yeah.
Tell me then, what do you aspire to in life? Where are you really hoping to go? Now that you've kind of traveled this journey, you turned your world upside down, this happened. I'm gathering that sort of between that Christmas where you really just said, I'm gay, I need to go with this, you started blogging. This is now 2 years ago, right?
Yeah.
And so you've gone through this 2-year journey where you ended your marriage, you accepted that you're gay, you got your foot in the water, but then you met someone, you've had many months now where you've been developing your relationship, what is equivalent to a marriage, because you're now in a monogamous relationship where you guys are committed to each other. You don't have marriage available to you in California presently. What's your future aspirations, both in the terms of relationships, in terms of family, in terms of everything?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first step, I mean, I'm still in school, so that hasn't ended yet. So I'm just kind of hoping to get through school and to get started in my career and things like that, and then hopefully to help him along the path to get, you know, help him learn English more and help him develop the career he wants. He's interested in like photography or fashion, and I'm interested in becoming a professor. So that's kind of one aspect of that. But as far as like us together, like, I don't know. I just want to build a life with him. I want to have a good relationship with him. I want us to experience life together. Hopefully someday we get to travel together. Hopefully someday we get to just experience things together. And I don't know exactly what will happen, but we've talked about it. I think both of us would love to have kids someday. I don't know when that's going to happen. We're not in a position right now where we could even think about that. And yeah. I would think that we'd want to get married. I'm kind of waiting for that to become a legal option before we really think about that or talk about that seriously.
And in your mind, you see kids as being a choice that's in front of you.
I see that as a possibility, yeah. It's something that we're both open to. I don't know if it's going to happen or not, but it's something we're both open to. And I think that we would ultimately, like, I wanted that when I was married. And it was actually my ex-wife who wanted to wait till we were in a more stable relationship with each other, which was very smart and I think helped us through that whole process, because it would have been a lot more complicated had we had children and had to, in addition to negotiating the problems and differences of our marriage and separation, like deal with what we were going to do with having kids. And so, but ultimately that's something I've always wanted. And so I would love to someday have kids, and I don't know when or how or if that'll happen, but something I'm open to.
Uh-huh. But I do want to just highlight that in this day and age, gay men, gay couples often have kids. They adopt, they do surrogacy, they do foster parenting. I mean, is that how you see it, that there's a variety of ways gay men become parents, and
yeah,
you have the ability to consider from all that methods? I mean, it's obviously not as easy because it's not automatic.
Yeah,
right?
It's not automatic. And I mean, it's financially difficult.
That is true.
But yeah, it is nice to know that there are options for us, or like something to think about.
I sort of see that it's on the minds of a lot of young gay people today. And I think part of that is because marriage is being discussed. And I think they're realizing that there are a lot of role models out there where there are gay men adopting babies. Lesbians have been doing this for a long time. They've been having kids. But gay men is just sort of becoming a recognized phenomenon. And so you have rethought a lot of your assumptions. And so you've got part of your journey ahead is to figure out what you'll do with that. But I'm encouraged to know that you feel like you can do what you decide to do about that and about everything.
Yeah. It's interesting because I think, you know, getting married to him, it's not the same sort of assumptions in some way going into marriage. Like, there's not this assumption either we're going to use birth control or we're going to have kids, you know? It's not automatic. It's something that...
It's like with heteros, they're going to have a kid unless they try not to.
Exactly.
With gays, they will only have a kid if they try, not only try, but try massively hard to have one, right?
Exactly. So, I mean, and that's actually probably really nice for the kid to know that they're really wanted and loved.
They were fought for. They were absolutely pursued. Yeah.
But, you know, on a level, I want kids and I've always wanted them. And that's something I want to pursue. And it's obviously something that between he and I, we have to talk about a lot more before it happens. But it's nice that
Yeah, definitely.
And it's nice to know, though, that he's open to that. Like, it's not. And that was actually a really important thing when, like, we were talking about how are we going to date? Is this going to be serious? Like, at least to know that we're on the same page as that being something we want to talk about down the line. So,
yeah. Well, excellent. Well, thanks so much then for sharing your story. And I'm, like I say, I really like the idea of putting people's stories out there, especially people who have come to a good place in their journey and it really seems like you have come to a good place.
Yeah, it's nice, like, to build a life with someone. That's my challenge now, is to build a home, to build a family, to build a community, and it can happen. And it's been a really hard journey, definitely.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of drama and a lot of experiences that have been in that, but, like, things do get better, so.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on being where you're at.
Thank you.
As in typical Mormon Stories fashion, which we are Mormon Stories here, Gay Mormon Stories, we like to offer you sort of a chance as closing comments to, we say bear your testimony, but do you have a personal summation that you'd like to tell us in testimony style?
Yeah. The most important thing that I've learned out of all of this is that you don't have to be who other people think that you should be. And I think that's one of the hardest things to deal with being gay and Mormon, is that you're expected to be a father, and you're expected to be a husband, and you're expected to be a priesthood leader, and you're expected to be all of these things. And somehow not being able to be those things, you feel like you're lesser, but you're not. You're not any lesser than other people. You're just different. And when you realize that you can do something different and that you can find joy in that and can be happy doing that, it makes all the difference. And I think that all of the struggle you go through, and all that I've been through, and like all of the pain and all of the depression and all of the tears, like a lot of it has to do with not knowing who you are or what your place is. And you have to realize that you can make that place for yourself, that doesn't have to be made for you. And so that's the message I think I'd want people to hear and know from my story.
Yeah, that is an excellent message. And I'm sure that's going to help people who hear this to realize that we carry a lot of assumptions, and each one of us has to kind of rethink our assumptions. And so, having said that, I just want to thank you so much for taking the time to do this.
Thank you.
To be willing to share your story, to be willing to share some of the vulnerable places you went. I want to close with that, and a big thanks. So you have a good evening and a good rest of the year, and good luck with school, huh?
Thank you. You too.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us today on Gay Mormon Stories. To discuss this episode with others, please check us out at gaymormonstories.org. If you want to see this podcast continue, please consider making a monthly donation, again at gaymormonstories.org. All donations go directly towards keeping the podcast alive and towards building a community of support for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer Mormons. Music for this podcast was donated by George Parkinson and Kelly Clark Parkinson. Was mad at
my view. The stranger started from disguise. The tokens in his hands I knew. The Savior stood before mine eyes. He spake and my poor name he named. Of me thou hast.